State Representative Joe Haveman from Holland. It's President's Day, but the representative is up in Adam this morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing just fine. How are you, Tony?
Before we dive into the political talk, just wanted to get your talk on Holland's own Kirk Cousins. what a life and career that young man has had already.
Yes, he's a remarkable young man. What a great career. I believe he's the most winning quarterback at Michigan State, if I've got that right, and just a great example for other young people and for college students around the world.
Have you had much interactions with him? Is there a story you can share with us?
You know, he actually went to high school with my own kids, but I have not met Kurt talked to Kurt in many years since high school. He played baseball with my son for a couple years. I believe he graduated with my daughter. But I know his parents a little bit, but no, I have not had much interaction with him in years.
Let's talk about the prison system here in the state of Michigan. Something we've talked about over the last couple of years here is how it seems other states house prisoners at a more efficient price tag than we do here in the state of Michigan. I know Indiana does it for $10,000 or less than we do here. I know sometimes the comparisons can be different for different reasons. What's your take on what Michigan spends to take care of the average prisoner?
Well, it is, and you touched on that, but it's important to remember that the comparisons aren't always equal. Michigan buries all its costs for its department within the department, whereas some states may put their costs, their legacy costs, their retirement costs, health care costs, in other areas. So we have a hard time getting to an apples-to-apples comparison. But we do know that if you just look at the salary and benefits of our corrections officers, we do fare on the high side. So I think when we look at the whole overall budget, where it takes up about a quarter of our general fund, over a $2 billion budget proposed by the governor, it's fair to say, you know, we have to get a handle on this. We have to continue to try and figure out where that cost is. And it's not hard to frankly figure out, because 85% of that cost is in salary and benefits. We have over 14,000 employees within the department, and as I said, 85% in salary and benefits. So it's a hard one to
Are you still with us?
Efficiently.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I am.
All right.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right. We had a little break there. Well, from your perspective, are the employees overpaid?
I think that, frankly, in comparison to other states, I believe they are. Not to say they aren't valuable, not to say we don't value what they do. That is not a job that many of us would want. But I think when you look at the comparison of Michigan corrections officers and employees to other states, I think that argument can be made.
As the chairman of the House Appropriation Committee, do you foresee that their salaries may be frozen or held at current levels to bring them into pace with what other prison workers make throughout the United States?
Well, if I had that kind of authority, that might actually happen. Those kind of negotiations between the administration and the unions are not my decision. And our state employee has just renewed the contract with escalating bumps in their contracts. So, you know, I don't have that leeway. I only have the ability to have some say on what their budget is. But when you look at the fact that the contracts are let, I mean, our hands are tied as to what we can do on that budget.
When we talk about privatization and Michigan prisons, you hear different sides of the story. I can recall when Sheriff Mike Bouchard from Oakland County was running for governor, he talked about how much money he saved with the county prison system by privatizing the meals and other services that they provide. But folks on the other side of that say that the company that, for example, was going to take over the prison in Baldwin was kind of a a money-grubbing, for-profit company that wouldn't have operated that prison as safely, as efficiently as it currently would be by the state. The Michigan prison privatization bill stalled. What happened?
Tony, what would you expect the other side to say? That's exactly the same rhetoric we get out of the other side whenever privatizing a service is brought up, is that it's done for profit, money grubbing, you know, services are going to go down. It's the same rhetoric. So it doesn't surprise me and it doesn't affect me that that this isn't the right thing to do. What I'm trying to do here is not just save money, but to also create a culture of competitiveness within our department. We need to start thinking about better ways of doing it. And by bringing a private influence into the system, we're going to do that. Hopefully, we would save money. This would be one experiment with one prison that we could see where efficiencies can be made and where maybe we can increase our quality. So this is not meant to close down every prison and open it with a private prison. This is to give the Department of Corrections a new tool to say, how do we do things better and for less money?
So why couldn't you get more folks on board with your bill?
Wait, we're not done yet. It's making its way through the process. You know, it's on third reading. Sometimes those third readings go right away, and sometimes we back up and say, okay, are there any other concerns that we have to address? Certainly people with a prison in their district have reason to be concerned. They want to look at it. They hear the pressure from the corrections officers and the public employees, but that doesn't mean this bill is dead.
I recently read at an online site called Bridge where shifting prison politics, how the GOP is getting smarter on crime. This is, I know, a big focus for you. Tell me about some other changes you'd like to implement.
Well, I am for anything that changes the status quo. I think we have been stuck in a paradigm that says if we lock people up for longer periods of time, somehow our streets are safer. And I don't believe that. I think if you look at what the governor said and the attorney general about the fact that Michigan has four of the most dangerous cities in the country, I think we can say that our past 20 years of building prisons and locking people up and minimum sentences, that none of that has worked for making our streets safer. I think it's time we back up and look at our culture in this country, in this state. We look at the way we look at our education policy and our parental policies and say, what is affecting these kids that they go into a system at a very young age and feel like the only way out is a life of crime? And I've been through enough of our prisons, and you see an overriding theme that these are kids between 18 and 25 are making up a huge amount of the population. Well, I use the adage time and time again that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. I think we have to start talking about that, how to keep people from going in the first time, whether it's diversion techniques, whether it's drug courts, mental health courts, a variety of techniques that are being looked at in other states, including very conservative states with conservative governors, that they're saying, you know what, we have to rethink our correction system. We have to rethink our justice system.
It sounds like you have a real passion for this.
You know, I'm not an attorney. I'm not in law enforcement, but for some reason, I have gained a passion for this issue. Not just because it's a $2 billion issue, but because I think Michigan can do better by its people, by both its victims, by its citizens, and for those we incarcerate.
All right, we're going to stay in touch with you as your bill works its way through the process. Thanks so much for your time. Happy President's Day.
Thank you, Taylor.